You've been listening to the Hudson Up presentation about universal basic income in Hudson. We're going to have an interview at 10. Catskill is on the web at the Altogether Now web stream.
And we're spending this time up front to talk to lots of people about it, recognizing that.
This is Darian Sahanaja of the Brian Wilson Band, and you're listening to 90.7 FM. WGXC Accra.
Wave Farms WGXC needs your financial support. In these extraordinary and unprecedented times, we know there are many worthy organizations in need. We hope that you consider Wave Farm among them. If you value WGXC and want to keep it a part of your daily life, we ask that you make a tax-deductible contribution to keep local and adventurous content freely available on the Upper Hudson Valley radio dial. Please visit WGXC.org, click Donate, and become a monthly sustaining supporter, or make a one-time donation. Thank you so much for keeping independent voices and sounds on your radio dial.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of the Bridge Street Theater in Catskill, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
You are tuned to 90.7 FM, WGXC. Grabbable, handleable, listener-fueled radio for Greene and Columbia counties.
Hi, I'm Andy Reid.
And I'm Mike Porter. You're listening to Catskill Cabin Conversations on WGXC Accra. That's 90.7 FM.
On each show, invited guests will be asked to discuss a number of items that they intend taking with them on their Catskill Cabin getaway. As we discuss their chosen items, it is hoped that you, the listener, will enjoy getting to know that person a little bit better.
Today's guest is Kyle Shea. Kyle is a graduate of Rochester Institute of Technology's College of Computing and Information Sciences and works for Dropbox in San Francisco. He lives in Oakland with his wife Jenna and his two cats, Chip and Dip. Born in Germany to American parents, he traveled often in his childhood, living in many locations throughout Europe and Asia. Kyle is a bicycle fanatic. He believes bikes address a number of socioeconomic and environmental issues and has used his bicycle as his primary mode of transportation since college, when he biked through snow and slush to RIT campus. He has been an activist for bicycle safety and access, demonstrating for safe city biking in San Francisco and volunteering as a bicycle mechanic for a nonprofit that provides free bicycles to people in need of transportation. In the realm of technology, Kyle is interested in internet security and privacy and rights to access to internet services. Protests organized by Kyle in 2009 led to Time Warner Cable ending their plans to enact pricing tiers and internet usage caps. Kyle started an open source project in 2015 with the aim of demonstrating an alternative model for internet companies. Tired of the state of innovation in Silicon Valley, which has come to rely more on investors and marketing than novel ideas that solve problems, he launched a product using an open source model. It is free for all users, and the code base is accessible for the entire world to read and even copy. Today, his project pays those who contribute open source code, designs, and translations, and serves a user base of 7 million all through donations. Outside of work, Kyle enjoys hikes, plant identification, programming generative computer art, attending electronic music events, hanging out with his cats, and cooking spicy vegetarian food. Kyle, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. Hi.
I see you're a quiet guy then.
Yeah.
Don't really do much. Keep yourself to yourself.
Disclaimer, the listeners should know that Kyle is, in fact, my brother-in-law.
He is. This is like a family week, Mike.
It is, yes. But yeah, we also recorded my Aunt Jackie.
Awesome.
We've had her on an episode for healthcare workers and their experience with the COVID crisis.
Oh, wow.
So we're hoping to get more people on board if we can.
Now, cool. I think it's worth informing the listeners that Kyle is actually in California. Thankfully for the technology Zoom, we are able to do this show. And everything's quite clear. The internet is fantastic, and it's great. And what time is it there, Kyle?
Oh yeah, it's about 4:50 right now.
4:50. Wow.
Still light out. Got plenty of daylight sunlight still.
So there's about three hours of difference.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's great. So now, tell us about this product that you've created for the world to use.
Yeah, so this is like a product that I worked on in my spare time, actually for a video game called Destiny. I originally just made it kind of for myself, just realizing there was kind of a gap and a need. And then I just one day kind of posted it to the internet, and a lot of people expressed interest in it, and a lot of people were interested in helping out to build it. And yeah, that was about 5 years ago, and it's just continued to grow in popularity in terms of people using it, but as well as people contributing to it. And we also have found through this, like, just like an amazing community that's all over the entire world. There's people in Australia Australia that are committing code, and all across Europe. And yeah, it's just a really interesting social project in a way.
Excellent, excellent. Now, Mike was saying in your bio that you like to ride bikes and fix bikes in your spare time. Could you tell us a bit about that?
Totally, yeah. When I was living back in Western New York in Rochester, there's a company or a nonprofit, I guess, called Rochester Community Bikes. And they just take in volunteers who are interested in working on bicycles just for the community for free. They had just like bike clinics that would happen 3 times a week. And then once a week, they would actually give out bicycles to people who needed them. So it was just really kind of a cool thing to be a part of. Yeah.
So what's the main things you need to fix, like the brakes and the mm-hmm. punctures and new seats
exactly.
and stuff like that?
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. All sorts of little things, but then also it was free for the community. Like, if people had an extra bike or anything like that, people were welcome to bring them to this this nonprofit. And then in the back, we'd have just walls and walls of wheels and frames and brakes and all that sort of stuff. And we'd just kind of put these Frankenstein bikes together that would be totally functional. And, you know, we'd clean them up really nicely, and they would work really well.
Now, did you make any, like, freakish-looking bikes just for fun?
Oh gosh, yeah, I haven't done that. I really want to get access to a welder someday to be able to do that. But
can I ask you one question? Can you drive or cycle a unicycle?
No, I can't. But
no, I think that would be really hard and really difficult to learn how to do. But you see mm-hmm. these people doing it, you know, and juggling and all that. I just wonder, you know, given that you love bikes, I wonder if you'd ever thought of trying it.
No, in college, I had a lot of friends that did do that. They would actually take a unicycle to class, which I always thought was really weird and fun.
You know, the bicycle, it's a miracle machine. It's just human power. You know, unless, of course, you get a moped or an electric bicycle. But under human power, you can do incredible things. It may be early in the program, but I have a bit of trivia for you gentlemen.
All right.
I apologize if we've already talked about these things, as some people have brought bicycles in the past, but this didn't seem familiar to me. The fastest speed a human has ridden on a flat road without assistance on a bicycle is, in miles per hour, Kyle?
100 miles an hour?
He says 100 miles an hour, and he says...
let me see now. 43 miles an hour.
The answer is 82.6 miles per hour. Split the difference between you guys. That's pretty impressive. A human,
that is fast.
And now that's what I'm talking about. There was no motor. There was no engine. It was a person under their own power. They were able to get up to 82.6 miles per hour, unless, of course, what I found was a bunch of hooey or poppycock, in which case you can disregard this. But I think that it's it may be true. Now, well, what about fastest downhill?
Oh, okay.
Using gravity as an assist. What do you say there, Andy?
Well, that could be anything, really, couldn't it? I mean, flying down Everest, or they flying down a hill?
They were dropped out of a plane.
I would say 120 miles an hour.
Okay, and Kyle?
I don't know, 100? I'll just keep my old answer.
Yeah, the answer, 137.9 miles per hour. Ooh, so pretty terrifyingly fast. Now, the first two-wheeled, this was interesting. Somehow this hadn't come up before on shows. The first two-wheeled transportation-like bike was called a dandy horse, or Laufmaschine. Another bit
is
of trivia.
German?
Ding, 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 ding. That was going to be my question. Where do you think it came from? It was Germany. Karl Drace. It translates to running machine because it looked like a bicycle, but it didn't have pedals.
Now, tell us about your job, Kyle. Mm-hmm. Sounds very interesting.
Yeah, so currently I'm working in the tech industry in San Francisco. Specifically right now I'm at Dropbox.
Do you work in Silicon Valley?
When I first moved out here, I was working in Silicon Valley. I was at LinkedIn. Silicon Valley is kind of more in the South Bay area. Yeah. And
anyway, tell us
about
your
job.
Yeah.
So I've been working there for about close to 2 years.
What is Dropbox? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so Dropbox is a way to share files and sync files from your computer to other people's machines. So it just makes team collaboration a lot easier. And that's kind of the direction that the company's heading right now, is they're thinking more and more about like small and medium-sized teams and just making it so that they can work together better, more efficiently.
I think at the very beginning of the pandemic, and the lockdown in New York, I used Dropbox, and I think I got like 30 days, and if I didn't pay anything, then they were chucking me off, and I used it for about 30 days, and it worked quite well, you know.
Yep, so yeah. That's the team that I actually work on. I work on the like trial.
Maybe you actually pressed the button and chucked me off.
Yeah.
Andy Reid. He sounds like an oaf. Click. Oh, man.
But it worked well, you know? So that was good.
Now, Kyle, you're in San Francisco. Mm-hmm. I went out to, I've been out to San Francisco. I visited you guys. Went out a few years ago. My wife's cousin got married. Now, on that particular trip, I was able to take a tour of the city, a tour in a van, actually with a gentleman from Germany, to make that connection, where Kyle was born. It was not the guy that made the bikes, I don't think, unless he's a time traveler, which based on his ingenuity in the year 1816, I wouldn't put it past him. Regardless, on this tour, I went to the LucasArts building, I think maybe their headquarters in San Francisco. Have you been there, Kyle?
When my parents came, we went and visited it.
There's a
notice how he said when his friends came, you were there.
What's that?
He never took you there.
Took
notice how he
took
said
Kyle?
When his friends came, he never took you.
Me? What? What? Are you what?
Right. See, he said that he went to it.
Yeah.
But he only went there when his friends came.
Yeah. Well, I had
never took you there.
Well, I had already been there because I was there for a wedding.
All right.
Hey, look it. Kyle and I, we're unshakable. We're bros. And
I think the reason we might have gone was actually because Mike told us about it.
Yeah.
Right. So, good escape there. Good escape.
And it's really fascinating. It's this kind of unassuming little, you just turn off and there's like a little gate, and there's the only way you would know you're at the right place is there's a fountain and a Yoda statue is in this fountain. Anyway, I ask because, Kyle, your first song that you would take on your Catskill Cabin getaway is The Saga Begins by Weird Al Yankovic. Now, this is a parody of Don McLean's American Pie, and it's about, I would say, the first of the Star Wars prequels. It's about Episode One, A Phantom Menace. I think there's references in there to the pod race and to young Anakin hitting on the Queen, Padme, and stuff. And one day he'll become Darth Vader. So that's your first song. And why that song, Kyle?
Yeah, so this was one of my first albums when it came out. I must have been like 10 years old. And that was also when that first new Star Wars film came out. So it was just kind of the perfect time, perfect storm of for just like a young kid during that time. And yeah, I would listen to that album time and time again. And until recently, I'd forgotten kind of about it. Weird Al came back and he produced some more tracks and stuff. But it wasn't until Jenna and I were on a road trip. I think we were driving down through Florida to Key West. And we were just trying to figure out how to pass the time. And we put on some Weird Al. And since then, it's just become kind of like a tradition while we're doing road trips and going on vacations and stuff to listen to some Weird Al.
A long, long time ago, in a galaxy far away, Naboo was under an attack. And I thought me and Qui-Gon Jinn could talk the Federation into maybe cutting them a little slack. But their response, it didn't thrill us. They locked the doors and tried to kill us. We escaped from that gas, then met Jar Jar and Boss Nass. We took a bongo from the scene and we went to feed to see the Queen. We all wound up on Tatooine. That's where we found this boy. Oh my, my, this here Anakin guy. Maybe Vader someday later, now he's just a small fry. And he left his home and kissed his mommy goodbye, saying soon I'm gonna be a Jedi. Soon I'm gonna be a Jedi. Did you know this junkyard slave isn't even old enough to shave? But he can use the Force, they say. Do you see him hitting on the Queen? Though he's just 9 and she's 14. Yeah, he's probably gonna marry her someday. Jedi. Now we finally got to Coruscant, the Jedi Council we knew would want to see how good the boy could be. So we took him there and we told the tale how his midichlorians were off the scale and he might fulfill that prophecy. Of course, could he bring balance to the Force? They interviewed the kid. Oh, training they forbid, because Yoda sensed in him much fear. And Qui-Gon said, now listen here, just stick it in your pointy ear. I still will teach this boy. He was singing, my, guy. Maybe Vader someday later, now he's just a small fry. And he left his home and kissed his mommy goodbye, saying soon I'm gonna be a Jedi. Soon I'm gonna be a Jedi.
We caught a ride back to Naboo, 'cause Queen Amidala wanted to. I frankly would have liked to stay. We all fought in that epic war, and it wasn't long at all before Little Hotshot flew his plane and saved the day. And in the end, some Gungans died, some ships blew up and some pilots fried. A lot of folks were croaking, the battle droids were broken. And the Jedi I admire most met up with Darth Maul, and now he's toast. Well, I'm still here and he's a ghost. I guess I'll train this boy. And I was singing, my, my, this here Anakin guy. Maybe Vader someday later, now he's just a small fry. And he left his home and kissed his mommy goodbye, saying, soon I'm gonna be a Jedi. Soon I'm gonna be a Jedi. We were singing, my, my, this here Anakin guy. Maybe Vader someday later, now he's just a small fry. And he left his home and kissed his mommy goodbye, saying, soon I'm gonna be a Jedi.
That was Weird Al Yankovic's The Saga Begins.
Quick question, Kyle. Do you know the words to all of that song?
I definitely did at one point. I was sort of singing along in my head, I guess. Yeah. Catchy.
I think that would be a tall order to get to know all those lyrics.
It helps to remember and walk through the actual movie. Kind of helps
you. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Excellent.
You're listening to Catskill Cabin Conversations on WGXC Acra. That's 90.7 FM. Today's guest is Kyle Shea, and we're discussing the songs and items that he would take on a Catskill Cabin getaway. WGXC is community radio that relies on support from listeners like you. Please visit WGXC.org to make a donation or become a sustaining member today. Kyle, thanks for being on the show.
Your next, totally. Thank you.
Next item that you would take on your Catskill Cabin getaway is a canoe.
Mm-hmm.
Now, canoes, they found a canoe in the Netherlands that was constructed between 8200 and 7600 BC. This thing was crazy old. Many indigenous peoples of the Americas, they built bark canoes, usually skinned with birch bark, and they would be kind of dinged up and they might spring a leak, but they could be easily fixed. And this, I thought, was really fascinating, and your wife, Jenna, may be interested to hear this. If this was a trivia question, she might get this. What American painter, author, and traveler wrote that the bark canoe was the most beautiful and light model of all the water crafts that ever were invented? The answer, George Catlin. Now, I know that Jenna wrote a paper about George Catlin for her undergraduate degree. I was able to read it. She sent it to me when I was young when I was a rookie teacher. And every year that I teach about George Catlin, I think about Jenna, and I think about that paper. He was kind of a forward thinker, George Catlin. He was a defender of Native Americans and their rights.
Good man, then.
And so, Kyle, we got a little to talk about here with canoes. Would you take, like, what material? Plastic, fiberglass, polycarbonate, aluminum? What do you think?
Oh, gosh. Yeah, I mean, anything that floats, I guess. But a wooden one would be gorgeous, yeah.
So I noticed that people are starting to have, like, inflatable ones now.
Yeah. Does that just kind of pack up into the back of your truck?
Yeah, you can deflate it, fold it up, put it back in the bag, and away you go.
That's correct.
I don't know if I would like to have that in case, because sometimes when you're in these shallow waters and there's been a lot of, you know, sun and there's not a lot of rain, sometimes these lakes get low and you maybe rub against fallen trees and stuff like that in the water. I think maybe the last thing I would want is to see one of them burst, you know?
Mm, yeah. It would make getting through, like, if you're trying to connect between two different bodies of water, getting through a little easier if it's quite light, if it's just filled it there.
Yeah. That's true.
For that, it would be nice. But yeah, popping would definitely be a concern.
So what do you have?
I we just have like a fiberglass one that my family has. I actually don't own one myself, but my grandparents have a cabin up in Ontario, Canada, and it's on a lake, just a really small, tiny cabin. And I'd go there almost every year, just during summer and that type of thing. And more often than not, I would try to spend some time in a kayak or a canoe, just kind of floating around in the water and paddling around.
Yeah, I like kayaking myself. I was kayaking last week in a local lake to me, Black Creek, it's called. And it's really, really enjoyable. I think once you get out, you see some of the animals and, you know, beaver at the side and all that. And it's really, really relaxing and enjoyable, you know. So
it is, yeah. You can just be sitting there for a little bit and then all of a sudden the wildlife comes out. You can be super silent when you're just sitting there on a river.
That's right.
Amazing.
You know, if you had your field guide in the Catskills, you might be able to identify bear or a fisher, a bobcat, bald eagles. You know, I've seen them out back in the trees where I teach. It's kind of cool. And you might see porcupines.
Have you seen a bobcat, mate?
You know, I actually, not in the Catskills, but I just had a bobcat on my trail camera up in the Adirondacks. I think it was a bobcat.
Seriously?
That or it was a mountain lion. I hope it was a bobcat.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. So you might see one of those porcupines. They're doofy little things. Or a trout or two in a stream.
My brother caught a trout last week.
Yeah. You sent me a picture. That was a beautiful fish.
Yeah.
But he was not in the Catskills or Adirondacks.
No, he was in Ireland.
And you know what's interesting? It was a little brook trout, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And it looked really, really similar to what you would see in New York State. You know, maybe slightly different coloring. And that, to me, is so fascinating. And it maybe, you know, brings up how the continents were once joined and, you know, the brook trout distantly related. And the geology, you know, Scotland, the United Kingdom, I think I've heard, like, the Scottish Highlands are geologically related to the Catskills. I might be wrong.
I've heard that as well. Like, the brick. The soil and all that is the same, and you know, and it kind of lends to the theory that they were joined together.
Yeah,
you know, about 25 years ago.
Yeah, you might, in terms of plants, see. I saw this. I don't know if I've ever seen this in the wilderness. Dutchman's breeches. This is the name of a flower. It's a kind of a forked boomerang looking white flower that resembles breeches, like white breeches that people used to wear. And that's interesting in New York, especially in the Catskills, because of the Dutch heritage here. You know, the New Netherland, New Amsterdam, this was primarily a Dutch colony. And you might also see some hemlock trees, although the vast majority of those were cleared for all the tanneries that existed in the Catskills in the 1800s. So the hemlocks are few and far between. But if you had your guidebook, you might be able to find one.
So, Kyle, have you done any, like, hiking or anything like that in California?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I think that's kind of where a lot of this interest started to be sparked, is I'd go on some nature hike. And it would be with just, like, a small group of people in the before times, pre-COVID. And some people would just, you know, be able to spot off, like, this is that plant, this is that plant. And it's just have an amazing encyclopedic knowledge. And since then, I've just slowly been trying to learn some, you know, the basic things and kind of move up from there. And it really is just a fun hobby. It's like collecting Pokemon or something.
Yeah.
when you learn one, you learn the next, and then you just want to learn more. And when you know these, you can, like, deduce, you know, what this one might be or sort of is related to. And you definitely get, like, a set of tools as it goes on.
Now, your next song, Pete Seeger's What Did You Learn in School?
When I was in school, believe it or not, in the last year of my school, you know, high school, as you would call it, there was a teacher strike. I think they went on strike for more pay. And I'd researched all these things for one of my exams, and they refused to grade it for my exam because it was deemed as extracurricular or something.
Hmm.
And I failed the exam. and I done all this work for nothing.
Oh.
I was sick. But anyway, let's not go down that path. Kyle, why have you chosen this song? It's such a stark difference from Weird Al.
Totally, yeah. Well, I wanted to have something that kind of just spoke to the times that we're seeing right now. This song itself by Pete Seeger. Pete Seeger is an activist, folk singer and writer, and I've been listening to him for a while, and I follow some other activist singers and songwriters, and this particular song came out in the 60s, and it's sort of like a critique on, you know, what we are learning in school and how a lot of what we do learn is not only is like white and Eurocentric. It's like a white and Eurocentric version of history that is taught in schools.
Right.
And I admire Pete Seeger, and I think it's patriotic to question the systems that we're in.
He was a fantastic man. He was very highly revered in the music industry and as an activist, as you mentioned there. And I think the lyrics in this song are so apt for today. You know, when we hear the song in a couple of minutes, you know, just listen to the lyrics. You know, it could have been written yesterday, you know. So that's the kind of things I was thinking about when you chose this song. It's such, you know, it's incredibly, incredibly apt. And, you know, sadly for me, we're going through some of the issues that are written about in this song, we're still going through them, you know. And as you say, it was 60 years ago.
What did you learn in school today, dear little boy of mine? What did you learn in school today, dear little boy of mine? I learned that Washington never told a lie. I learned that soldiers seldom die. I learned that everybody's free. And that's what the teacher said to me. That's what I learned in school today. That's what I learned in school. What did you learn in school today, dear little boy of mine? What did you learn in school today, dear little boy of mine? I learned that policemen are my friends. I learned that justice never ends. I learned that murderers die for the crimes, even if we make a mistake sometime. And that's what I learned in school today. That's what I learned in school. What did you learn in school today, dear little boy of mine? What did you learn in school today, dear little boy of mine? I learned our country must be strong. It's always right and never wrong. Our leaders are the finest men, and we elect them again and again. And that's what I learned in school today. That's what I learned in school. What did you learn in school today, dear little boy of mine? What did you learn in school today, dear little boy of mine? I learned that war is not so bad. I learned about the great ones we have had. We fought in Germany and in France, and someday I might get my chance. And that's what I learned in school today. That's what I learned in school.
That was Pete Seeger. What did you learn at school today? Great song, as we mentioned, Kyle. Very apt for today in terms of the lyric content.
You know, we're talking about what did you learn in school? Did you have a back to basics book in school?
In school?
What do you mean by that, Kyle? Back to basics book?
So there actually is a book that's called Back to Basics. And it's funny, for the longest time up in Canada, this is one of the books that we had at the cabin. And for the longest time I'd flip through it and we just, you know, read every page and every square inch of it. And you know, what it actually talks about is, everything from, like, you know, how to introduce cats to each other, to skinning a rabbit, to watering your garden, or like how to clear land and build a house, and with regards to things like the direction of the wind blowing, and like, it gets like super, super detailed, and it's just like this fun
raising, like, livestock.
Yeah, it's got everything. It really has everything in it.
Enjoying the longest harvest. Yeah. House skills and crafts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And for the longest time, I knew every page of the book, and it wasn't until kind of recently that I realized that we had like the Canadian variant of the book. So when I actually saw like the US version, it was very similar in every regard, but it was just like some very small, I don't remember what the exact differences were, but
how to order a Big Mac at McDonald's. How to order a Big Mac at McDonald's. You always want a super size.
How to order your Nick Tahoe's garbage plate.
Hey, there's a good shout out to the Rochester region, the garbage plates.
Yeah, I was going
to
say, you two should know what that means.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. You know, though, somehow, the first time I think I had a garbage plate was when I was dating my wife, Nicole.
Yeah.
That was the first time I'd ever had a garbage. Somehow, I never made it out to Rochester. I think I heard my uncle lived off of them for a while when he lived in Rochester.
But, God, how long did he last?
He's still kicking. He's doing good. He was actually it was during his bodybuilding years. So I think that's how he kept himself in check. But for the listeners who don't know, a Nick Tahoe or any restaurant in the Rochester area, a garbage plate is a couple hot dogs, a couple cheeseburgers thrown on top of baked beans, macaroni salad, coleslaw, and it just looks like a plate of garbage.
French fries. A meat sauce over the top of it.
Yes.
And you usually get one when you're drunk.
Lots of Frank Red Hot
Sauce. It tastes beautiful. And then you wake up in the morning and you go, oh my God.
It's true that the establishments are frequented by inebriated youth in the wee hours of the morning.
They are delicious, though. We've tried to make them. We do yearn for them sometimes out here in California.
Hey,
what's
you
it
could
called out there? A Golden Gate.
Hey, that's pretty good. Oh my gosh, Kyle, you and Jenna have to open a restaurant.
A Golden Gate.
Yeah. And hey, you know, now there's Beyond Beef. There's Impossible Meat. You could have a pretty wicked vegetarian, and it would taste just like a regular garbage plate, but it would be entirely even vegan. You could do even a vegan garbage plate. It'd be really good.
Put on some bacon as well.
Yeah. I don't know if they've come along quite as well with that, but like Impossible Meat, Beyond Meat, that stuff is good.
It's not bad.
I've used it for cooking, especially Impossible. It's just not that. I was looking online today. It's like $70 to have 20 hamburgers shipped to your house. So it works out to be like $12 a pound or something. And it's just like, that's a lot for a hamburger. But I don't know. I wish they would sell it in stores. It's not quite in stores here yet.
They do sell it in stores.
Like Wegmans, but not anywhere around me. Impossible.
Well, if I see some, I'll bring you some up.
That'd be awesome. I'll pay you. I'll pay you for it. Stock me up. I'll fill the freezer.
Bloody right, you'll pay me for it.
$200 for 5 cheeseburgers.
I'll cook it and I'll be like, no. No.
But. Yeah.
That's when Mike snapped.
Give me my cheeseburger. Now, Kyle, you mentioned in this Back to Basics book, I think, that they talk about introducing cats.
Yeah, just all sorts of random things.
Introduce them to who? Like,
to each other. Like, if you have 2 cats, right, yeah. If you have, you get a new cat.
This is John.
Well, Jen and Kyle had a cat for a time named Dubby. Dubby the cat. And Dubby stays now with my parents. And Nicole and I, we have a dog named Hank. And when Hank was a little puppy, we got him just around Christmas time, just before we went out to Western New York for Christmas. We drove out there with little Hank the puppy, and he had to be introduced to Dubby. And Dubby was not thrilled. And we have this great picture of Dubby sitting on top of a chair and little puppy Hank sitting under the chair. And Dubby looks really disapproving and really irritated. And Hank is just like kind of terrified. And then years later, we got another picture with both of them basically in the same position with basically the same expression. Except at that point, Hank was a 60-pound dog. But recently, they've been getting along really well. Hank doesn't make eye contact, and that seems to do it. They're able to walk by each other, and he's always just like, don't make eye contact, don't make eye contact, don't make contact. Is she gone? Okay. And they're all good. But I wanted to bring it up, Kyle, because Dubby is short for dubstep, I believe. And that's a genre of electronic music. Aphex Twin, Polynomial C, is kind of electronic, kind of maybe not dubstep, but
yeah, no, you're totally right. Electronic track, and the reason I picked this one was when I listened to it, it's sort of like a sort of ambient track with like some breaks and that type of thing, but it's of sort of a genre that I usually listen to, like when I was commuting into work outside of the pandemic. Every morning I'd get on my bike and bike down to the train station, get onto the train, which goes under the bay. And as it comes up on the other side in San Francisco, I'm listening to songs like this, and it just is a really great backdrop. This song is a great backdrop to like the urban landscape.
Thank you.
Now, Kyle, your next item, your last item that you'll take on your Catskill Cabin getaway is a Scott card deck. And not to be confused with, like, Andy, who is a Scot. This is a little different. Tell us about it.
Yeah, so it's a German card trick-taking game. It uses a 32-card deck instead of 50. And it's similar to Euchre.
52. If you're familiar with that. 52.
52, yeah. Thanks. It's usually three people who play at a time. And the person who is... going to like try to like get points, that person will play against the other two people, and there's like a bidding phase in the beginning that helps determine which person that's going to be. But it's just like a very quick, fun, leisurely boisterous type of game that is, I just have a lot of fond memories playing it with my grandparents, my parents, and my siblings.
Now, quick question, how are you going to be able to play this when you're on your own?
Well, that's what I was wondering. I think I would just carry the Scott card deck in case I do run into people. Maybe I find two other people.
In case I run into people.
Well, hey, yeah, no. Exactly. He's gonna have the John James Audubon, the field guides, right? So he's gonna befriend a bear. He's gonna befriend a porcupine. Bring those guys in.
He's gonna introduce them to each other.
Introduce them to each other. It's going to be able to do that. It's right. Going to be a kick butt weekend.
Now,
everyone's eating Golden Gate plates.
having a whale of a time. Well, there wasn't a whale there, but you know what I mean.
Not in the Catskills.
That'd be a great time. Now, when I first read the information, now it's spelled Skat, isn't it? And maybe pronounce that scat. And because you took the field guide book, I thought you were taking cards with you, scat cards, so that you could identify the particular types of scat around about the cabin, so you know what kind of wildlife was there.
Oh, that's a bear.
What I thought you were taking.
Definitely a bear.
I was learning.
But I was wrong. Now, did you know, Kyle, and you, Mike, did you know that modern cards are based on the class system?
I think I had heard that. It makes sense. King, queen, jack.
So the spades represent nobility, apparently.
Okay.
Hearts, the holy clergy. Diamonds represent merchants. And clubs represent peasants.
Oh, no way.
And face cards depict real people from history. Apparently. So, Prince Charlemagne is represented by the King of Hearts. Julius Caesar, the King of Diamonds. Alexander the Great, the King of Clubs. And King David, the King of Spades.
Huh, fascinating.
Interesting, huh?
Yeah. I'd never heard that.
I have a quiz for you. Guy called Brian Berg, and I think he's from England. Or the British Isles somewhere. Now, he created a world record in 1992, but he then broke the record in 2010 for the biggest card house. He built a card house, House of Cards. He built the biggest one, right? Now, how many deck of cards did he use? Kyle, I'll give you the first guess. How many deck of cards did he use? Decks of cards?
I'll say 8.
I'm going to go with 50.
What?
50 decks of cards.
Right. I'm going to give you the question again, right? The guy created a world record.
Yeah.
For the biggest and most elaborate House of cards in the world.
Yeah.
How many decks of cards did he use? Now, I'm going to give you a bit of a clue. It took him 44 days to build it.
Oh. 1,000 decks, Bob.
1,000 decks. Kyle.
I'll go for 500.
4,270 wow. decks of cards.
That to me is unfathomable. Like, he must have been using glue. You know, he wasn't just like straight up stacking the cards. I mean, imagine that. You're on day 43, just one day left. Oh my gosh, so close to the world record. And then,
the house was like 25 feet.
Wow, amazing.
So there you are. Kyle, 8.
Kyle will not be building a house.
I could probably get maybe 10 cards.
This guy wants me logic every day.
Yeah, but I mean, yeah, but how is this logical? You spend 44 days building a house of cards. If anything, it's the opposite of logic.
yeah, there you go. Anyway, so that's what I just wanted to pass on.
Now, your last song, Kyle, before we wrap it up, DJ Pierre, I Feel Love, the 1979 disco club mix. Why this song?
Yeah, so I love electronic music, and I love going out to events and dancing with friends and all that type of thing. And I specifically chose this track and this artist. DJ Pierre was one of the original producers of house music, which was born out of disco, which also led to techno and just almost every other form of dance, electronic dance music was from these black and queer artists living in Chicago and Detroit during the time. And I wanted to highlight DJ Pierre, just, you know, as I said, one of the originals. And I love this song just because it's a song that, you know, if I'm alone, even if I'm alone in the woods in a cabin, it's still a song that I would love to listen to just to celebrate. And it's a song that just makes me want to dance.
That was Nathaniel Pierre Jones, better known to us all as DJ Pierre, playing I Feel Love, classic tune. Good choice, Kyle. Nearly called you Nathaniel there. Good choice, Kyle. Good song, really liked it. Now, just to kind of say a little tiny bit more about what you were saying about the, you know, house music and stuff like that, and how like it was kind of born out of Chicago and stuff. The stuff that I was reading that in 1987, Pierre was involved in creating what is now known as Acid House. And that Acid House name derived from and described the Roland 303 that was used to create that actual sound.
So, exactly. Yeah, yeah. There's an instrument company that's called Roland, and they produced the 303. It was originally supposed to just be a bass machine that was meant for pianists to like have some accompaniment while they were, you know, playing the piano. They could have some sort of bass music playing in the background. And these producers in Chicago, they found all this hardware, this music hardware, and they had access to it like secondhand, because a lot of people weren't really sure how to use these instruments originally. And so they kind of like were able to create this electronic music with just kind of, you know, the discards of these synthesizers and stuff.
Yeah. I mean, because I played in a band, I played in quite a few bands, but one of the bands we played in, we bought a Roland. I can't remember what make it was, but it was it cost about $1,000 at the time. That was 1988, 1989. That was a lot of money. Mm-hmm. But it was the spine of our music, you know, because we kept all these songs in this machine. So if that broke down during the set, that was it, you know.
Yeah.
But they were vital for us for creating songs, and you know, it allowed bands to be playing with maybe just like three people on stage, but having a full sound, you know. So interesting, and it was a kind of breakthrough at that time. So, yeah.
Well, Kyle, thank you so much for being with us today. We've come down to the end, got to wrap it up. Anything else, Andy? Anything else you wanted to bring up?
No, I think we're fine. I think maybe just let Kyle go and have a garbage plate or a
Golden Gate.